Okay, if I could introduce our very brave panel of business people. I'm actually going to get them to introduce themselves. They're going to tell you what business they're in, and they're going to have a go at answering why they went into business. Not always the easiest question to answer. So we'll start with Liz on the left.
I hate these things.
Your mouth.
I'm Liz Thacker, and I've got a small business that's involved in needlework and sewing, doing lots of alterations and couture dressmaking. Just me at home, working in a little studio in our garage. It's my second career. Started when my youngest child started education. I turned my hobby into my business.
I'm John Thacker. You've heard enough from me already, but just to let you know, I've been an accountant for as many years as I can remember, but I've actually been a partner in the firm for about 18 years now. Why did I go into the business? To some extent, it was the next step up, but also it was a desire to help sort of shape a business.
My name's Andy Ferrett. I run a web development company. We build websites, build mobile apps. We're based over in New England House over there, and I employ, there's six of us in the company, currently all from CCK, but that's not kind of our strategy. It just happens to be the people I know. So I actually started the company in 2006, just doing freelance kind of web development myself, but about 2 years ago or so, took the step to start employing people, went into business with a good friend of mine, and so that's kind of how it started. In terms of why, it's kind of funny looking back on it now, but I actually did it to try and get more time to do work at church, and which is not really the case anymore. But that's kind of why I did it. I do actually work 2 days a week also for CCK, overseeing some of the technical stuff.
My name's Russell Bisessa. I own and run a company called Brighton Property Solutions, which provides property maintenance for managing agents and building surveyors. The sort of things we do are like the Brunswick Square. We will renovate a whole block, and that's the sort of size of work we do. The reason I went into business is I wanted to provide enough income to secure my family's future, and also I very much wanted to create a business that was able to make a lot of money and fund church activity and tithe, really. So the way the church needs to go, I think... if we really want to make an impact on the city, we want to serve the city and take the church up to the next level, I do believe there needs to be an increase in funding. And I think my personal belief is that tithing is probably not sufficient enough. So I kind of acted on it and kind of thought it was best to kind of start a business and really aim big and to encourage others to do so. So I'm very excited about this. Really.
Great, cool. Okay, I want to open this up to questions that you might have from this evening. So if you have got questions, chuck a hand up and I'll identify.
Picking up on what Russell just said about aiming big, was that something scary at first, or did you always feel that there would be backup and that God would provide whatever you needed to have that big business you want?
Repeat the question.
Right, okay. Was it quite scary going into something where you were aiming big from the start? Is that?
Yes.
No, because I wasn't starting big. So, in a sense, you start where you are and you just go for it. So, I think you can only do what season you're in and then aim for the next season. So, it is a path and you've got to take the next step in front of you. So I don't know whether I'll ever achieve that, but I'm aiming for it and I'm trying and I'm trusting in God and that's really it. So,
right. Brilliant. Another question?
How easy or difficult is it to take the first step? Just go
for it. Okay, how easy or difficult was it to take the first step? And I'm going to ask Andy.
For me, I was able to kind of do it over a period of time. So I was in a job where I was IT manager for a charity in Eastbourne. And I got myself in a position where I could sort of say, hey guys, I'd like to take a day out and just work for you 4 days. And I kind of built up enough credibility with them where they said, yeah, that's fine. And they're a really good company. So I was able to do that. And then I went down to 3 days, 2 days, and they could see where it was going. But I still do some work for them as well. So I was able to take a bit of time to do that. What was the question? Remind me.
How easy
was it
to take the first step?
So that was sort of fairly straightforward and easy step. The harder step was then to take it, okay, I'm freelance, I'm doing this myself. The harder step is to think, okay, I want to do this intentionally as a business and bring somebody else in and start to employ people. That was the trickiest step.
Same for Liz.
I started mine going from a base of being at home with children, so I just gradually started. I'd already was doing work for people and not charging, and the hardest part was actually telling people I was going to charge them from now on. And gradually the business had built up from that, starting just doing, you know, a couple of mornings a week. I now do more than full time because all the children have left home and I have the time, so I've just fitted it around that. So it wasn't difficult to get going. The hardest bit was pricing it and telling people I was going to charge them.
Question. Wendy.
Did it build more through word of mouth or
self-advertising? Was it more personal recommendation? Okay, I'm going to ask Russ. Did your business grow through word of mouth networking, or did you have a strategy? I'm going to add: did you have a strategy to advertise your business?
I think you have to go with both. So I think if you do a good job, then you are going to get recommendations and that are going to lead to more work. But I think if you want to grow quickly, you've got to somehow accelerate that. And I think, so therefore, you need to have a strategy and that's quite direct. So for me personally, it's quite important to identify a niche customer and kind of really understand what they want, and then build your business and your product or your service around that. Because basically, if you're delivering exactly what people want and they know you're there, then that can encourage growth. So I'd say the key thing is to understand your customer. What exactly do they want? And then deliver it in a way that's profitable for you.
Okay, I've got a question I'm going to throw in here, and I'd like you all to answer at some point. How many hours a week do you work, if you put it all together?
I'm actually doing less than I was, which was quite nice. I work 6 days a week anyway, because I do 4 days a week for my company, and I do two days a week for CCK. For a few years before that, I was doing evenings on top of that as well, but kind of reached a pretty much crisis sort of point September, October last year. Last year, 2011, where I just had to cut all the evening stuff out. So I do 6 days a week, 8-10 hours a day, I suppose.
At the moment, it's quite a good position. Doing 5 days a week, probably about an 8 or 9 hour day. There are things in the evenings. There's sometimes a bit of work at the weekend. If I went back 8 or 9 years, I was in a bad place. I was in a situation where I was just felt I was on a tightrope, and the only way to get off was to cycle harder and harder. But the trouble was there was no end to the tightrope, and I was working 7 days a week, very, very long hours. Got too much. So I know from experience you have got to watch that. But I'm pleased to say it's now in a good level.
At the moment, I'm working a lot of hours because it's wedding season and it's very busy. Come January, I don't really work very much at all usually. So it does really, really vary. and how much I work is determined by how much work I take on, and I can turn it away. So when the children were at home, I didn't work August, and I didn't work holidays, and I stopped work at 3 o'clock, and if I had a lot more to do, I'd do more when they went to bed. So it's ever so flexible, and it's up to me. But I'm not very good at managing it, so I've got too much on at the moment.
Saying no is difficult.
I don't really know how many hours I work. But what I would say is I work. My day starts at 6 in the morning and ends at 11 at night. And there is time for family within that. And then there's work. So that's it really. So probably 60 hours a week maybe.
If I can just add in as well. I think when you start to really run a business, it does become all-consuming. So even if you're only in the office X number of hours, when you know at times when it's really busy or there's pressures, it's on your mind all the time. So it's more than just a kind of 9 to 5 or I work these hours. It's kind of a more continual thing.
Okay. Question. Hang on. How do you
sort of discipline yourself with things that you find not your strength, but you still got to do it? Like, you're
pointed to podcasting. Excellent question. How do you discipline yourself to do things that you don't feel you're good at?
Yeah, not your
strengths. Not your strengths, but you know you've got to do them. That's good. John.
I said something about that earlier, didn't I, really? Well, one good way is to get other staff to do it. But you can't necessarily start in that position. And sometimes you need various sort of self-disciplines to think about, and one of them is frogs. Okay. The reason I say frogs, there's an excellent book by Brian Tracy called Eat That Frog, and the point is that if you eat a frog first thing in the morning, you're not going to have to do anything worse that day. Now, I do not by any means always do that, but there's a good principle there. At least it's in the back of my head, if not the front of my head. I must tackle those hard things. And the thing is, when you do tackle them, the energy and the satisfaction, the release you get is really important. I think as well, another thing is you need to diarise it. Sometimes make an appointment with yourself. Okay, I will do that. I will do the budgets. You love doing the budgets, don't you? But those things you don't like, you need some sort of structure, I think. Be it something in your head, be it a discipline, maybe even asking somebody else, can you ask me tomorrow whether I've done that? Accountability is really helpful.
Excellent. Russ, could you? How do you deal with that? Because
I think it's sometimes it's a character thing. And in a sense, if you work on your character, I mean, some of these things, they're critical, so you have to do them. And when you realise they're critical, you get on with it. I've read a book once by an ex-Navy SEAL, and what he said was that you should pre-program messages that cause an emotional reaction. So, for instance, if someone says, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going, and they suddenly get a bit of energy. He was saying in situations that you find difficult, like pre-program like a phrase and try and associate an emotion with it. So I think for me, sometimes it's like, you just get on with it. You know what I mean? Just do it. And sometimes that, for me, just makes me determined and get on with it. And I also think of why I'm doing. So I'm trying to provide for my kids. I'm trying to, provide for my wife, and I think when you start holding things in context like that, I think suddenly, like, not doing it seems pretty poor. It does, and you've got to get on with it.
Brilliant. Okay, Jane, you had a question?
Yeah, what's the best thing and what's the worst thing about having your own business?
Best thing and worst thing about having your own business. We'll start with Liz and we'll move along.
I think for me the best thing is flexibility, that I could have look after my children and work without having to juggle things too much. It was up to me. I was there at home. The worst thing is my business is at home, and it's there all the time, And it's really hard not to be drawn back to it when it's busy. And then people ring on Sunday afternoons and during Sunday lunch. And that's a real pain. So, that's the best and the worst, I think.
Liz doesn't answer the phone on Sunday is how we've dealt with that.
But don't call me.
So they get the company secretary who's not so customer-focused as the... Okay, so what's the best thing? What's the worst thing, people? What's the best thing, people? I think that, for me, I think with my personality, is a challenge sometimes. And I've had to work really hard in understanding different personality types and sorts. But it can be the most challenging thing when you just aren't communicating and there's issues with people, be it internally or externally. The best thing can be when you really feel you've done something that absolutely has helped and satisfied a client or has really helped a member of staff develop and grow. So it's the best and the worst.
The worst, I guess, is kind of the stress and the pressure of you don't really experience outside of... If you're not running your own business, it's kind of completely differently. although I'm sure there's other stresses, you know, in life. But the best, I guess, again, is the kind of the flexibility. You know, I can sort of take an afternoon out, go and do something else if I need to. I guess because I've got in a position now where the business isn't revolving entirely around me. There's other people around who can answer the phone and do the work sort of thing. So,
For me, the worst thing about being in business is that there is no safety net. And so, I mean, if my business fails, my family's on the street. You know what I mean? It's literally like that. So, you know what I mean? The buck stops with me. I don't work for a company that could cover me. And I think the best thing is that I am in control of my destiny and I can reap all of the rewards of my effort. And I'm in control. I'm the boss of me. And that's incredibly fulfilling.
Can I just ask Andy, how do you deal with that stress?
Sorry, that not wasn't, very well.
That wasn't a loaded question.
Danny knows me very well.
I just, you know, what?
Kind of September, October time, as I said last year, I kind of reached a really kind of crunch point in stress. And I'm not entirely sure what brought it on, really. But I was just sleeping so badly. I mean, I was sleeping kind of 3-4 hours a night kind of thing. And just kind of emotionally all over the place. So I kind of had to basically just draw a load of lines and put boundaries in where I kind of never had them before. So I did lots of things, lots of little things. So I was getting the train into work. And I found that just if I drove, so I was able to borrow a car. If I drove into work, I got another, I don't know, hour to myself, half an hour there, half an hour back. So I was just able to have a bit more time. Things like on the way home, I turn the email off on my phone so I wouldn't have any email sort of in the evenings. And as I said also before, kind of cut out doing any work in the evening. I still sort of try and do that because I find any kind of work in the evening for me now means I don't sleep at all because I think it just gets your mind going and you're kind of into it. So lots of things like that. I'm in a sort of very sort of privileged position really. I meet with Danny, my business partner Eric, and Jay Jones, and we all work in New England House. So we meet there on a Monday morning at 8:30, and we pray together just for half an hour. Well, we normally kind of talk for about 15, 20 minutes and then pray for 10 minutes. But it's an incredibly sort of supportive environment because we're all going through the same things. And so that's, you know, that was a huge, huge help. Also, about the same sort of time, I did the Faith and Enterprise course, which Michael and John run. And again, it was kind of a group all together, going through very similar things, very, very helpful instruction from these guys, but also support. So, yeah, so I think kind of getting really good support network and also doing kind of lots of little practical things that help on that sort of stuff.
Brilliant, thank you. There was another question, Russell.
Yeah, Theopetus once asked the question, it may be a good idea, but is it a good business idea? How could you help us distinguish between the two, please?
Okay. I'll just repeat it. Theo from Dragon's Den said, you may have a business idea, it may be a good idea, but is it a good business idea? How do you distinguish between the two? And I think John is desperate to answer this.
Okay. Just sometimes you get a question, you think, I've got a good, well, I think it's a good answer to that. If you only read one business book, read Good to Great by Jim Collins, utterly fantastic book. In that book, he talks about something called the hedgehog concept. Now, what the hedgehog concept is, where three circles intersect. It is what you can be the best in the world at, what you're passionate about, and what drives your economic engine. In other words, you're good at it, you love it, and it pays. And it's got to have all three if it's going to be a business idea. If it doesn't have the it pays, it's a nice hobby. Okay. So I find that little model of thinking about those three things when you get what you can be good at, you've got the skill, what you love doing, you'll have the energy, but it's got to pay as well.
Anyone want to chip into that? Or?
I think how I would look at it is rather than find sort of customers for your product, find products for your customers. So from where I come from, it's more about identifying a customer and what they want rather than having an idea and then trying to find people that will buy into it. So, and I think that's what marketing is ultimately. It's understanding your customer and giving them exactly what they want.
Excellent, thank you. So another question.
Liz, have you ever had to employ other people to help you?
I've been in a position where I had enough work that I could have done, but I didn't want to employ anybody. It would mean moving out of our premises at home because my studio is quite small. And my company secretary said it wasn't a good idea. I have employed a friend to do some specific bits of work as a piecework, and I have employed our daughter to do some bits and pieces where she sits on the sofa watching Friends or whatever, doing hand beading for me and so on. So I have used other people in that sort of way, and I have several people who are in similar businesses that I pass work on to, and then I say no to people. And if I've got too much work on, I say, sorry, too full. It'll be 6 months before I can do that for you. And they come back and say, yes, please. And but, yeah, so no, I haven't. And no, I wouldn't. I want to keep my business just me, flexible, easy. I'm not out to make a lot of money. I'm out to just employ myself and serve people.
How do you handle a situation where you're starting a business which is similar to where you come from employment, and you might need to, and you, there are very few pool of clients in that area or that industry, and you might have to pull from similar kind of pool of clients that your previous employer was pulling from? How do you handle that kind of?
Hang on, I'll try and summarise that. Okay, how do you think the best way is to handle approaching a small marketplace that is shared by your previous employer? That's a tricky one, actually. Well, that's more of an ethic, isn't it? So what would you think?
I was in a situation like that when I started Brighton Property Solutions, where I was subcontracting for a contractor, saw what they were doing and thought I could do this and do a much better job. I think what I did was that I actually avoided those clients and kind of went, and the market wasn't that large, but I kind of felt ethically it was right to do that. I think in your heart you've got to do what you feel morally is right. And kind of and do the business plan, do the maths, and if it adds up, if you can not touch those clients and still make a good business, then it's great. If not, then maybe, I mean, it's not right, or you need to develop your product so that you have more customers, maybe.
Okay. How, what sort of effect has running your own business on your partners, on your relationships with your wife, husband? And I'd like you to all answer that.
I'll go first. Well, you've already heard my sort of business strategy that Liz's business shouldn't expand. I've had, as I said earlier, times of heavy stress, and it's been a learning curve for me. I've made, you know, a lot of mistakes in the way I've handled myself, but miraculously, I'm still here, still going, having learned from it. I think all I can say is it's been Liz has helped me hugely through it. Fortunately, she's not perhaps had the same stress, or she's got a stronger personality and character. But I think it's important that if you are a couple, that you really do go into it together, even if only one of you is running the business, because as has been said earlier, there are stresses, there are strains, it's different. There's great more flexibility, but there's more pressure. So it needs to be something that's gone into together. But I think for my part, I'm just extremely grateful for Liz's support. Your turn.
What effect does being in business have on your marriage?
As John said, we've had some quite tough times with John's business. Not that it's been failing, but that he's been very stressed. And that's hard. It's really hard to cope with. And you've got to be quite strong, but also quite understanding of it. And I think by having my own small business, I've been able to be perhaps a bit more understanding than I would have been. But I think it would be impossible for both of us to run big, thriving business, employing people separately. I think that'd be very hard. Whereas doing what I do, I'm at home all the time, and I can support John in what he does, as well as the children who are planning businesses themselves. I didn't tell you that, did I? The youngest is. So it is. It's tough, and you've got to go in with your eyes open, really.
I'm not sure there's much I could really add, apart from, I guess, my wife Naomi has just had to get used to sometimes me being distracted, and, you know, come back from work, just my mind's still in it. I'm trying to get my head out of it, but it's still kind of dragging me back. So she's really had to, you know, get used to that. And although she's not in the business in terms of being on the payroll or having kind of any active role in the company, she kind of is, because she's with me, and she has to have an understanding that it's us together doing this thing. Do you know what I mean? It is us together. I don't really have a huge amount to add, but there is definitely a pressure there, and you have to kind of really just work it through and talk it through.
I think when we got married, Michelle and I got married, I worked a 40-hour week, and now I'm working 60. And even when I'm with her, my mind is ticking, ticking, ticking. So I think, I mean, it does negatively impact on your relationship. I think for us, we've had to learn to communicate a lot, and to manage our expectations. I think Michelle's expectations of how much time I should be spending with the family and mine are can be different, and it's important that we keep talking, and that's a regular occurrence. So once a month we'll sit down and look at our diaries and talk it through. And I think sometimes I've learnt to try and switch off. So for every evening now, I have 1 hour in between 7 and 8 where phone goes off and I switch off, and she has my undivided attention, and we put some jazz on, have a cup of tea and a cup of coffee and sit down and talk and kind of try and spend some quality time together. And just, and I'm there to hear how her day's been and stuff, and I think that's sort of helped.
Never knew you was into jazz, Russ.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, we've got time for a couple more questions. So,
A very practical one. How do you, right at the start, what is the best advice for pricing your product or your service?
Right from the start, what's the best advice from pricing your product? How did you do it? Andy, I'm going to ask.
How much will people pay? It's kind of as that, that simple. You've got to do a bit of market research, find out what other people are charging. You know, is that feasible? But yeah, ultimately, it's kind of as much you you feel is it's worth, and people will pay.
Actually, and Liz, could Liz answer that? Because you said that was the most difficult thing for you.
Yeah, I did some market research, looking what other people charge and the quality of service they provided. So some people I look at it and think, I charge more than that because what I do is better. And some places I charge the same but provide a better service. I also work out how many hours I spend on something and try and keep within a price band of my time priced on that. It doesn't always work. But I also, I've got, not so many now, but I used to have a lot of elderly lady customers. And part of my service was going out to them and giving a personal service, driving to their property, going in, talking to them, having a cup of tea with them, looking at the pictures of their grandchildren, altering, you know, pinning up their dress hem at the same time, coming away, doing it, charging them next to nothing for it and taking it back. I'd made no money out of those. But I just felt it was a service that I should be providing, and it wasn't just about how much money I'd make. And I do have a bit of a flexible pricing scheme, depending how much I think people can afford. So if somebody arrives at my house in a big flashy BMW dripping diamonds and has got their wedding dress and is really horrible to me, I charge them more. And, you know, if they come in and they've come on the bus and they're obviously not very well off, I charge them less. I can do that. It's my business.
So you know how to turn up at Liz's house. Great. One last question. Sorry, Kenny.
I think so. Obviously, being a sporty, just kind of one business. I want my business to be properly set out for God and be able to sit for God. How practically can I set that out aside from other sporting businesses? And the same yourself. So, did you want to be known as, because you were saying, you know, the city needs proper Christian firms out there, and people can go actually, these Christians are better at what they do. How practically can we do that? And how practically do you set yourselves the same as being Christians?
Okay, how practically do you set yourself aside, if you do, as a Christian in business in the city? How do you do that? How do you? What does that look like? And I'll ask, Russ and Andy and John, I think.
I think you just got to live out biblical principles, and sometimes that differentiates you and sometimes it doesn't. I think things like honesty and integrity and a pursuit of excellence, you know, be the very best you can. I think those are the things you need to do. So in some respects, your product may not look different, but how you go about it might. And when things go wrong, you know what I mean, do the right things, you know what I mean, put it right and be honest and be upfront. I think those are the things that will set you out.
Yeah, difficult question. Good question, but difficult. I guess we're called to be salt and light, aren't we? So, you know, whether or not people necessarily recognise it, we're living out what we feel God's calling us to do. I think, yeah, just some of the same things that Russell says in terms of integrity and doing what you say you'll do and all that kind of stuff. It's sort of fairly obvious. I think occasionally, you know, I've been running the business sort of as it is for 2 years, occasionally get the opportunity to kind of say, oh, you know, part of a church or Christian or whatever. I think maybe one or two times in that period. But that's quite an exciting opportunity. Got to go out for lunch with one of the sort of managing director of one of our clients, and he was just asking me. He knew I was part of the church here because his company's just a few doors up from here, and so I just got to sort of say about church and faith and stuff like that. I'm very, very basic because you're also aware that this guy's a client and a big client for us. So I kind of being very careful, but taking the opportunity to salt and light. I mean, yeah.
I think those are just great answers from Russell and Andy, really, that say it. And I think it's demonstrating by running it by those values, really. I think one thing I just add on is that really caring for people. Now, you may not think that accountants care or have any feelings, and you're probably right. But I think, you know, it is important. I think it's just demonstrating you really care for people. You show interest, you give them time, you seek to understand them. And this talked about with her elderly lady clients. And I think that is just demonstrating, you know, how God loves people, that we just really show we care and give them our attention and our best.
Brilliant. I think we'll stop the question there. I want to thank you guys for answering those questions. We're going to have up until 9:30 an opportunity for you to mix and chat, more wine, more cheese, biscuits. These guys are going to be around, and you know, if you're looking for someone that's in business, the people with red on their badges are in business, but there are also others around that are in business as well. So just go up to someone and say, are you in business? Thank you ever so much for coming this evening. Hopefully it's been helpful. The John's notes and PowerPoint will be downloadable on the city. Don't forget, we've got another event May the 12th here. Again, information on the city for that. If we just give these guys a round of applause. And
just a big thank you to Danny, really, who's really initiated this thing. Brilliant, Danny.